if it seems that everything is lost, I shall smile and never count the cost. If you love me, really love me, let it happen, darling. I won't care.
Fighting Over Beverly by Israel Horovitz. Starring Rosemary Harris, Ian Carmichael, Elizabeth McGovern, and Israel Horovitz.
If I didn't say this is a bit of a shock, seeing you at this current age of ours, Arthur, I'd be lying through my teeth. Not that you don't look well. You do look well. You look very well indeed. It's just that you look, well, 71.
Well, I can understand you're being rocked back in your heels a bit, Bev. Half expected to still see a skinny, full-breasted 18-year-old myself. Seeing you old as you are, well, it's a bit of a shocker, isn't it? Yeah, not that you aren't still attractive. Oh, you are definitely that, still attractive. Just that you're not 18 anymore either, are you? Quite honestly, I expected you to look like your mum when I last saw her. But thinking it through, Bev, I never actually knew your mum when she were any older than about 38 or 39. I mean, she were a kid next to you and me, as we are now, wasn't she?
She's just recently died, Mum.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, the loss must be tremendous.
Mum was 90. Very nearly 91.
Oh, must have been a tremendous blow, nevertheless. When my own mum died, I were totally shattered. Quite truly devastated. I didn't eat right for a year. Couldn't look at red meat or cooked chicken. Influenza.
You got it?
She got it. Oh. That's what killed her. I never married, Bev. From time you ran off with him, from time you disappeared, right up till now, no wife, no other love of any solid significance, no romance that was ever, well, you know, estimable. Just you in me head, in me memories, and nobody in me bed. Oh, there's a rhyme in that. Beverly in Archie's head and nobody in Archie's bed. Now, that, to me, is poetic injustice.
Are you hungry at all? Have you eaten?
I had a lovely fish soup in a calf just across from station.
Maria's? Seafood chowder.
Yeah, that's it. Seafood chowder. Right, we're top class. Whacking great china bowl with just about every sort of seafood you could imagine floating in the thing. Scallops, clams, plaice, prawns. It came with quite a substantial side portion of chips as well, with lovely crispy bits. Very nice meal, that.
One of our favourites. When our daughter Cecily visits, she brings absolute buckets back with her to California, frozen in tubs. Oh, she adores Maria's chowder.
Beats bangers and mash, don't it?
But, Arthur, it's only 1 o'clock.
Well, I were early getting into Gloucester this morning.
You came in by train?
I did. But not all the way from home.
Oh, I know that. You must have flown from home.
No, I took a boat from home.
Oh, did you? A cruise ship?
A freighter. Container ship out to Liverpool.
Oh, well, there's your tea. 2 sugars.
Aye, 2. Ah, ta, very much, love. Ah. Mmm. Oh, lovely. No, I don't fly. Not since war. It's too upsetting. I've had my fill of sky and clouds, thank you very much.
Well, I can understand that, Arthur. I really can. Zelly doesn't like flying after his bad luck in the war.
No, I shouldn't think he would.
Zelly has some terrible memories.
Yeah, as do I. I don't even try to sleep at night. My night dreams are too upsetting. I get whatever sleep I can in daytime. Usually no more than an hour or two.
Well, that's enough. Rest.
Rest? Rest is somewhat other than sleep, isn't it? You know, Bev, I'd known Zelly'd lost his leg, but, well, actually seeing it, actually meeting Zelly, I mean, and seeing first-hand that he is legless, I'm... Well,
It's upsetting, I know, but Lily's adjusted to the artificial leg totally. He takes 2 walks a day.
Does he now?
Mm, 2 a day. 1 in the morning and 1 in the afternoon.
Every morning? Every afternoon?
Never misses.
Ah, that's good to know, eh?
Oh, Arthur. Oh, I'll just go and get the biscuits.
We have got things to sort out, haven't we, Bev? All this chat and back-chat we're doing is bloody tiresome. Small talk, middle talk, grand talk. It's all just bloody useless talk, isn't it? We don't have time, Beverly. It's not like we're young people. Ah, is your Zelly a good husband, then?
As husbands go, Zelly's a good one, yes.
You made a terrible mistake, Beverly. I'm sure you know that. I mean, it's obvious, isn't it? I intend to take you back with me, Beverly. He's had you for 45 years. Enough is enough.
Oh, Arthur. Oh, you can't be serious.
Oh, I am, Bev. I have loved only you. At first I thought it was just a kind of obsession because of your duty to me as you did. But after some years I came to realise it were true love. Nobody's ever held a candle to you, Beverly. You're the one.
Oh, I'm just flabbergasted.
Are you? Well, then you can easily imagine how bloody flabbergasted I was, can't you? Waiting at station in Driffield, alone, ringing a ring box in my pocket, all paid for, smile all over my face, ear to bloody ear. I'm watching couples recoupling, kissing, hugging, passion in the air, thick as mustard. I'm thinking to myself, Bev is so in love with me. 10 hours later, I trudged home totally knackered, deeply depressed, bewildered, quite honestly devastated. And I have to tell me mum you never showed up. She's stunned. Nearly falls back from shock a bit. I tell her I think you've bolted with your yank. Mum says to me, never, she says. Bev's not that sort. 2 years later, almost to the day, that woman is in her grave.
You're not implying I was in any way responsible for your mum's death, are you? Oh, you are.
This is not a matter of implication, Miss Leach. These are hard, cold facts of life.
I was 18, Arthur.
As was I.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Arthur. I'm sorry that I did what I did. If I were able to live my life over, I would do things differently.
How so?
I wouldn't have run off so mysteriously. I would have talked with you eye to eye, truthfully.
Would you have changed the outcome?
Meaning, would I still have married Zelly?
Aye.
Well, I don't know if I would have married Zelly, but I do certainly know I wouldn't have married you, Arthur.
I think I should be told why you have just said that, what you have just said.
Arthur, please. Entire lifetimes have passed between then and now.
Would you let me kiss you, Bev? I so much want to kiss you.
I'd prefer you didn't.
For old time's sake.
Oh, I think not. The idea of a man wanting to kiss me, wanting me romantically, is not an unattractive idea. And you're not an unattractive man, Arthur. But I don't mean to hold out any false hope, especially to you, given our history. I only want to be truthful with you. Close your eyes, please.
Oh, I love you dearly, Bev.
No, Arthur.
Oh, please.
No, Arthur, you mustn't. Certainly not.
Please, Bev.
This is my husband's house. Now, kindly respect this.
Why did you run off and marry him?
Because I fell in love with him.
Why?
Zelly was exciting to me. He was forbidden by my parents. He was exotic. He was American. Zelly was young and beautiful. He got into a plane and he flew against the enemy. Zelly fought to save me, my family, our little town.
So did I, all of the above. What's so bloody great about what he did versus what I did?
Oh, there's a tremendous difference, Arthur. Zelly was shot down whilst protecting me. Us. Zelly was decorated, made a hero. Even my father calls Zelly hero.
Because he was shot down?
I beg your pardon?
Zelly getting shot down made him an hero?
Of course it did.
Bloody hell! That is sickening. That just makes me sick.
I shouldn't have said yes to you, Arthur. It was wrong of me to have said yes to you. I do apologise. I wouldn't have hurt you, not knowingly, Art, not for the world. I adored you, Artie. I just didn't ever love you.
Then why ever did you say you'd marry me, then?
Because you asked me long before I met Zelly. Because you persisted. Because you wouldn't let me say otherwise. Because you wouldn't let me say no. No, I just lied to you, Arthur. I was thrilled when you proposed marriage to me. But you personally did not thrill me. Zelly personally did.
And does he still thrill you now?
Thrill me? Now? No.
Then leave him, Beverly. He's had his time, he's had his chance. Let me have mine. I know I can thrill you. I understand that Zelly did all the right kind of talking to you back then, but back then's done and gone. It's me who's bloody talking to you now, my love. I'm talking and I am saying I got me help. I've got a fair spot of wealth, and I've got all the time in the world to prove the tremendous love I feel for you, Beverly Leach. You're the only woman I have ever bloody loved, Beverly. Then, oh God, I do still love you. What I lack in grace and charm, I make up for in the depths of my love for you, lass. What I lack in the way I look, I make up for in the way I look at you. Let me prove myself to you, Bev. The worst that can happen is that you'll explode yourself out of this bloody tedium.
I'm home!
Sally?
Well, at least he's smart enough to announce himself in case we were in throes of copulatus delicto.
Pardon?
Look, don't say yes or no now, Beverly. Just promise me you'll think about all this.
I'll think about all this, Arthur. I do promise you.
Ah, it's snowing again. Wicked. The head of the harbour's frozen solid. The kids are skating on it. On the ocean. It'll kill you this kind of winter if you don't bundle up. But it's beautiful to look at. At least I myself think it's beautiful. So are you. Mm-hmm. My wife hates winter. If she ever leaves me, she's going to leave me in winter. The man loves his wife. I hope you like seafood chowder, Alf. I brought us back about a gallon of the stuff. Put this on the stove, Mother. It needs reheating. Local chowder reheats perfect. What's this? I missed something comical here? There's something funny about reheating chowder? What? What?
No, Archie's actually had a bowl of chowder already.
Yeah, no, please, please. It was my first chowder ever, and I loved it. No, really, Sally. I'd love another go, really.
Are you certain?
Yeah, absolutely. It were lovely. I've never seen oversized prawns like that before. No. Certainly not in a soup. We were used to tinned prawns at home, weren't we, Bev?
Ah, yes. Terrible little salted prawns. Tinned.
We're all just prawns in game of life. My father used to make that joke endlessly. We're all just prawns in game of life, Arthur.
Oh, it's rather sweet.
No, you don't understand. My father said that very same thing. We are all just prawns in game of life, Arthur. Over and over, from time I can remember right up to the time he died. Possibly once or twice each day. Drove me round bleeding Ben.
Well, it's still a rather sweet little joke.
That's a joke?
Prawns in game of life.
Prawns are shrimp, dear.
We're all just shrimp in the game of life is a joke.
Well, I'll pop this into the kitchen and reheat the chowder. I won't give it.
I'm drinking whiskey. What are you drinking these days, Arch?
I'm not allowed.
Me neither. What did you used to drink in the old days, Arch?
I never drank spirits. I was never allowed spirits.
Never?
Not ever.
Not even when you were young?
Yeah, oh, definitely not then. My father were a caretaker in a village convent school.
So your father didn't drink either?
I wouldn't go so far as to say that. No, we lived in a northern town called Driffield. It's a little place. Everybody saw everything.
So nobody in this town drank?
No, that's not what I'm saying, no. Half the people were half sozzled half of the time. The other half of the time, the other half of the people were completely sozzled.
I can't follow nothing coming out of your mouth. You know this? Are you doing this to mock me or what?
Look at this photograph, Sally, will you? Ah, she's lovely, isn't she?
Who, Bev?
Aye, Bev. Who in bloody hell do you think I'm going on about? Pope Pius the bloody third? Are you giving me stick?
I'm going to have myself another shot. You want to join me?
Oh, I'll have a belt of brandy if it's all the same. I see your Napoleonic brandy bottles out for public viewing, and one might assume consumption. If it's all the same to you, I'll have a belt of that.
Here.
So,
you staring at my leg?
No. Tars, Ellie, very much. Hair of the dog, tooth of the rat, never eat flesh and you'll never grow fat.
Cheers, Archie. Good health. May the best man win.
Yeah, it's the better man, not the best man. It's just two of us. Three of us and it'd be best man. You're not implying that there are more of us, are you? Other men?
The thing I always hated about the English is that they're always correcting your English. I've been speaking English just like I'm speaking now for my whole life, and nobody ever didn't know what I was saying. You follow me on this? Hand me that picture. Bev was something then, huh? How come we get so old so fast, huh, Arch? We have all these big deal plans, all these wicked big deal plans, but then we finally get some time for ourselves. We get a couple bucks in our pockets, and our wicked big deal plans, they don't fit nothing. They don't make sense for the people we are now, for our age. It's wicked awful depressing, huh?
No, I don't know. Some people think their grand plans keep them going, keep them alive. Some of our deepest thinkers say without grand plans, you pack it in.
You got yourself some grand plans, Archie?
Oh, aye, Zelly. I most assuredly do.
I was thinking you might. You ready for another belt?
Yeah, don't mind if I do.
It's ready. We'll eat in the kitchen, if you don't mind.
Soup's on. Good health, Archie. May the best man win.
We'll kiss again, like this again. Don't let the teardrops start. With love that's true, I'll wait for you. Alfreda's name, sweetheart.
Vera Lynn was greatest female singer who ever lived on planet Earth.
She was pretty good, yeah.
We'll meet again.
We'll meet again.
We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
Oh, it was an amazing time, wasn't it?
Oh,
yours till the stars lose their glory. Yours till the birds fail to sing. Yours to the end of life's story. This pledge to you, dear,
I bring.
Oh, bless us. Oh, still brings tears to my eyes. I've said it once and I will say it again. Vera Lynn were greatest female singer who ever lived on planet Earth.
Who do you think the greatest male singer was, Arch?
In my opinion, I never liked male singers.
Sinatra.
Oh, I certainly never liked Sinatra.
Crosby.
Oh, I couldn't bear Crosby.
Arthur never liked any Yanks at all, did you, Arthur?
We used to say, Brit rhymes with grit. And Yank rhymes with wank.
Bev's dad and I got wicked close, like family. I don't mean like in-laws kind of thing. I mean like family.
I remember your dad well, Beverly.
Bev's dad was like my best friend.
He's been gone about 20 years now.
Honest to God, I miss Bev's father more than I miss my own father. I would have liked to have called him Dad, honest to God.
He suffered wicked, Dad did.
I'm sorry to hear that.
You wonder what God's thinking sometimes, making a man like Den Leach suffer like that. The man had heaven's touch, I swear to Christ. When they found me, I was barely breathing. They thought I was a dead man. November 44, November 12th. 2 dozen of Adolph's flyboys, Heinkel 3s out of nowhere. Just 6 of us, mostly Mustangs. We were fighting in the clouds over the town of Beverly, Bev's mum's town.
I was named for Beverly.
A bunch of Spitfires come up to help us, Brits. I got hit from behind, the first barrage. I fell out of the sky. My plane went down on Spalding Moor, half a mile from the runway. Exploded. Nothing left of it. I parachuted clear, but I was way too low for soft touch, and both my hip joints shattered from the force of my hitting the ground. All the main nerves in this leg got cut. Bone was sticking out through the skin every which way. Hey, I shouldn't complain. Huh? I mean, I was one of the lucky ones. My best friend, Tommy Murphy, he got hit direct. He got blown to bits. They only found pieces of him. They never found his head.
Oh.
18 years old, bright, nice, smiley kid. They got me back to the base hospital and they worked on me round the clock. They told me I was going to live, but they had to take my leg. That's what they told me. Straight words, direct. No beating around the bush, no hedging any bets. 5 doctors in a goddamn circle around me, all educated, trained men. All of them dead wrong. They could have grafted bone. They could have saved it. They just did what they did because it was quick. Because it was easy for them. I mean, you imagine this, taking a kid's leg when you don't have to. I couldn't see any reason for staying alive. It was Den Leach who taught me different right off the bat. Soon as he sits down, he looks me in the eye and he goes, "Get off your bottom, lad. Get a move on." And he gets him to strap this heavy old metal leg on me. And then he shoves me out of my goddamn bed. Can you imagine this? He shoves me out of my goddamn bed. It was like God himself sent Den Leach to Zelly Shimmer to do this. Between Bev and Den, I was up and I was walking every day of my life from then on. They saved my miserable goddamn life. That's what they did.
I was stationed just over the road at Pocklington.
I knew this. Yeah, Bev told me this.
And we're in the same skirmish. 12 November.
I knew this too, Arch, yeah.
Auxiliary Squadron 608. Joint membership. Us, you Yanks, Czechs, Poles.
I knew this too, yeah.
We were sergeants getting 30 quid a month. You lot were lieutenants getting, what, 5 times that?
$255 a month plus allowances. This is big money back then.
Yeah, by point, exactly. The squadron of Jerry's made it through. 1 bomber, 2 dozen ankles. I went up with 9 others, Spitfires. We chased them off.
I guess you Brits would have to get the credit for chasing them off, yeah.
Terrifying thought. Jerry's come in and out of England at will, like it were no trouble for him at all. I myself think the Irish were in cahoots with Adolf. Thick with him. Teamed up with him.
I never heard that particular theory myself.
Oh, well, it's me own. I got no use for Irish. I'd rather go to war against them than with them. I tell thee, God's honest, I never met an Irishman who wouldn't drink your vinegar and bugger your spaniel. They didn't war. They dropped the length of training period for RAF fighters like me from 14 weeks down to 6. But with you Yanks, they threw the bloody requirement out at window, didn't they? Nothing cheered me more than watching your Yanks 7-day wonders trying to start their engines and books on their laps open at lesson 1. Oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't be thinking of talking about wartime. It's too upsetting. I go on about it, don't I, now? I get myself too worked up. I offer my apology.
I accept. And to Zelly?
Oh, I said not to offend Zelly, did I? You're not Irish, are you?
Me? Irish? Nope.
Well, wouldn't surprise me none if you turned out to be after what I said about Irish. I'm always saying painfully incorrect things. I've got a bleeding knack. My dad used to tell me I put my foot in my mouth so often I had eel marks on the back of my throat. So what are you, then?
Zella's half Jewish.
Ah, I think I do that from your letters. Well, now, being half Jewish beats being all Jewish, doesn't it? What's the other half?
Partying mostly with some Italian snuck in.
Ah, there you go, then. I had a lovely holiday in Portugal a few years back. The Portuguese do very nice fish dishes. Oh, I love a nice piece of fish. It's a tricky situation we've got going amongst us, isn't it? I don't want you to think I don't appreciate your letting me stay under your roof, Sally, my lad. I do. I appreciate your hospitality, given who you are in relation to Bev, and given who I am in relation to Bev.
You're welcome in my house, Archie, because you're one of Bev's oldest friends. Also, I got to admit that Dan Leach spoke well of you, too, so that in itself is more than enough to let you through my door. But I'm going to tell you something, bub. You so much as touch a finger to my wife, and I'm going to rip you to pieces and feed you to the friggin' seagulls. You get me on this?
I can't say it isn't flattering, you two, what's going on here. Because the odd thing is, it is flattering. But at the same time, I think you're both disgusting. Absolutely and utterly disgusting.
Archie Bennett. Arthur Bennett. You must be Cecily.
You're Arthur Bennett?
The man himself.
My God. I'm sorry.
What is so funny, may I ask?
It's just that I've been hearing about you for years.
Have you?
I have.
From whom, may I ask?
From my mum. But every time she talked about you, it was always in this darkly romantic / sexual context.
Oh, God.
The same thing happened to me when I went to a Sinatra concert when I was in college. The same kind of shock and surprise. All the time when I was little, my parents went on and on about Sinatra. They played all his records, took me to a couple of his movies. But when I went to his concert years later, I was 20, and it never once occurred to me that in life, Sinatra be this old, old guy. Still acting young and, you know, cutesy. Then, this 200-piece orchestra starts playing Try a Little Tenderness, and Sinatra starts doing this boyish, I love you, with his baby blue eyes, and every old lady around me is instantly reduced to tears, and I don't get it. I mean, straight and simple, I just don't get it. I mean, you know, have you ever heard Otis Redding sing Try a Little Tenderness? Now, that is something to bloody cry about. Do you know what I'm saying here?
They asked me how I knew Ginsberg was a Jew. I promptly replied, he's been circumcised. This is how I knew. I don't give a tinker's damn who you are, Bev's kid or Bev herself. I don't like having me piss taken. You want to try to take piss out of me, you're going to be squashed. I am the master of piss taking.
Oh, I hope I haven't kept you waiting.
Wow, look at you. What a beautiful dress.
Well, thank you, dear. Have you introduced yourselves?
Sort of.
Not formally.
Cecily Shimmer, Arthur Bennett. Arthur, Cecily. Cecily, Arthur. Cecily's my daughter.
Well, she had to be your daughter, because you're buried from the same bleeding bush you are.
I've mentioned Arthur to you, haven't I, dear?
Did you tell Daddy?
That you're home? Yes.
And?
Well, he's quite upset.
And?
Well, he'll tell you himself. He's just getting dressed. Oh, goodness me. Look at the time. It's so terribly early, isn't it?
The red eye always gets into Boston early. They say it lands at 6:30, but I don't care what you say. It really lands at 5:30. If they advertise 5:30, nobody would ever take it, so they lie. Sorry. I always babble when I'm sleep-deprived.
Oh, it's always something, isn't it? I mean, just when you think your troubles are this, then suddenly they're that. Cecily's left her husband.
Just?
8.5 hours now. He drove me to the airport.
What grounds?
The airport?
A divorce.
Are you getting divorced?
On the grounds that enough is enough?
I'll drink to that.
On the grounds that men are selfish, heartless pigs? Huh? Do I not hear you drinking to that?
Are you getting divorced, Cecily?
I don't know.
Well, what did you tell Arthur? Why did Arthur say what he said?
He's your boyfriend, not mine. Ask him.
I've known many a married man and wife to live separate from one another for years and years, but never actually divorce. Better for kiddies, they say. If you don't mind my giving you a spot of advice, that'll be it, Cecily. Live separate, but never divorce.
Did you call me Cecily? My name's not Cecily. It's Cecily.
Oh, is it? Oh, sorry, love. I thought your name were Italian. Your dad said some Italian snuck into the family.
You mean snuck in, like through the window kind of thing? What's he saying?
I don't know. What are you saying exactly, Arthur?
Well, I thought you said you'd given your daughter an Italian name.
Cecily? You thought my parents named me Cecily?
Well, I've known many a Swiss miss to be named Geneva.
Nobody's making any sense. It must be the time change. I'm still on L.A. time.
Oh, Arthur's still on English time. It's already afternoon in Arthur's mind. He's 5 hours ahead of us.
That explains it. By lunchtime, I'll know what he's talking about.
Cecily's been living out in California. She's in the entertainment industry.
I made this terrible career choice. I misheard my father. I thought he told me to go into show business. It turns out he told me to go into the shoe business. Of course, he also told me the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe was really called the Lying Bitch in the Wardrobe. You boys do have your little prejudices, huh?
Is it just California men you find to be pig-like, or is it all men you find to be pig-like?
Only a man would have to ask.
Oh, Cecily's a very successful talent agent. She represents film directors and screenwriters. Her husband's a screenwriter. He's working on a screenplay with George Harrison, the former Beatle.
The singing Beatles from a poem?
Well, not all of them, just the one, George.
Hi.
Who's with little Gerald?
That's not my problem.
Fine. I'm getting some coffee. Is there any fresh coffee?
There's a fresh pot waiting in the kitchen, darling.
Fine.
Is your husband not very tall, then?
What? Oh, no. Little Gerald's her stepson.
He's with his mother.
He's 9.
He's yours, not hers.
Pardon?
You said little Gerald is mine.
9! I said little Gerald is 9.
Oh, sorry. Oh, my hearing's getting worse and worse. You're not one of them nutter feminists I've been reading about, are you? Hairy legs and armpits. Feminists can't stay married more in a matter of weeks. Is that what you are, then, a bleeding feminist?
I have a look in me armpit.
Has anybody seen my storm coat? What are you doing?
Nothing much, Dad. I'm just showing Archie me hairy armpit.
What? Take a walk with me.
Outside?
Yes, outside.
It's snowing outside.
So what?
My blood's thinner than yours.
They say this happens to East Coast people after they've lived in California a while. They become cold-blooded.
It's the essential nature of the film industry.
I beg your pardon,
cold-bloodedness.
The climate. I mean the climate.
No, I meant the climate. When Easterners go west, they get cold. Their blood thins.
Stop your goddamn babble, will you? You're making a fool of yourself. You sound stupid.
Oh, nice. Really nice.
Would you like me to take a walk, then, Sally? I wouldn't mind, lad. I rarely see a snowstorm as violent as this one. I'd like very much to be out experiencing it firsthand.
No!
Yeah, that'd be great. We need to have a family powwow.
Meeting, he means.
I know what powwow means. From pictures.
He means the movies.
I know what he means.
Well, I'll walk with you, Arthur. We could get the morning paper.
Ah, lovely.
Zelly's spare snow boots should fit you. They're in the pantry. We'll go out the back door. Is half an hour enough?
Fine.
Well, come with me into the pantry, Arthur. You can try the snow boots.
All right.
He's disgusting.
Don't change the subject.
It's not your life. It's my life.
Oh, yeah? Whose house are you staying in?
You want me to leave? Fine. Now? Tonight? When?
What about little Gerald?
What about little Gerald? He's got a mother and a father. Doesn't it ever occur to you to put your arms around me and say, I can see you're unhappy? And I love you.
Doesn't it ever occur to you to call your mother and your father first and say I love you and I need you and then maybe ask, can I come to your house before you show up?
Oh, you think I should ask permission to see my own mother and my own father? You think this house is your house, not my house too?
Yeah, lady, that's what I think.
You are really screwed up.
Oh, well, save the psychoanalysis for your sophisticated show business friends. If I was 40... I would never run home to my mother and my father like I was 12.
That's what I started out telling myself. But then I thought, you get one mother and you get one father and they have to count. They have to figure into your life decisions.
Come off it.
Aren't parents supposed to be behind their children no matter what?
Children. Yeah, children, maybe. 40-year-olds, hell no. Marriage number one is fine. Marriage number two, maybe. Marriage number three, you're on your own, lady. You leave us out of it. You want help with a life decision, fine. Here's help with a life decision. You go back to Gerald and little Gerald and you stay married.
Want a drink?
What's this? When did you start drinking brandy in the morning?
I'm still on L.A. time.
So it's even earlier.
Fine. This is my last drink of the night in L.A. Cheers.
That was just awful. They say every man in France gets up in the morning, has a belt of brandy, and hits his wife. Now I know why.
Did Gerald hit you?
No. Gerald didn't hit me. Believe it or not, there's more to hurt than sticks and stones.
Let me tell you something loud and clear, lady. I never asked for kids. I never wanted them, and to tell you the God's honest truth, I still don't. But I got them, didn't I? I got you, and you got me, and we're stuck with each other. So this is life, and we put up with each other. We make the best of it. But so help me God, I'm not going to stand back smiling while you mess up some little innocent 9-year-old kid.
Like you did?
What's that crack supposed to mean?
Remember me? I was the 9-year-old kid sleeping in the pink room. And, hey, I'm messed up. Dr. Weingarten thinks I can't stay married to Gerald or anybody because of you. Because of the marriage I grew up watching. I'm the only person Dr. Weingarten's ever met in his entire career who actually spent their childhood praying that their parents would get a divorce.
Is that a true fact?
That is a goddamn true fact. Your wife is miserable. You know this? Your wife has been unhappy for 45 years. She has felt unwanted and unloved. She has felt homesick, disconnected from everything she loved. She's wearing dresses again in the daytime, and she is panting with excitement now that that sub-humanoid's here in the house back in her life. You know why? I'll tell you why. It's because finally she's feeling some connection to her youth. Finally she's feeling some connection to affection for the first time in 45 years. She feels loved.
You shut your mouth.
You slapped me.
Yeah, you're goddamn right I slapped you.
Don't mean to interrupt. I just want to tell you that we're off now, Bev and me. Off into fresh snow. You know, I'm really very happy that I spent my time and money taking this trip. Very happy.
When I grow too old to dream, I'll have you to remember.
He's nuts. You know this, yes?
Your father. Both of them.
They weren't talking to each other at all at breakfast, so I asked him, Archie, if he was enjoying America.
Oh, I think he is. What did he say?
He said, Yank rhymes with wank.
Oh, did he?
Again. And then Daddy goes, Brit rhymes with shit.
Oh, dear me. They're not getting on at all well, are they?
So then Archie goes, that's bloody grand top, coming from a yob that's got one leg missing.
Good. Miss me. Arthur said that. Oh, I am shocked.
For a couple of seconds, I thought they were going to have a fist fight.
Well, I dare say.
They are both terminally nuts. Neither of them said a word to each other after that. How could you even know somebody like that?
Arthur?
God, yes. Arthur.
It's sometimes difficult to determine which man you're so intensely hating, Cecily. You seem to hate them all.
I'm just a little vulnerable at the moment, Mum, so maybe you could hold your more intensely judgmental thoughts to yourself.
And you can't imagine you're being judgmental, calling both my husband and my old friend terminally nuts.
I'm not judging you, I'm judging them.
Are we saying that judgment is defined objectively versus subjectively?
Don't get British on me, Mum. Please, stay mid-Atlantic so we can keep talking, okay?
Oh, you're pacing, darling.
I'm either premenstrual or pre-migraine. I don't like my choices. Maybe it's broken.
Isn't it working?
Yeah, it is. I'm not. Why does he sleep in the daytime?
Arthur? Oh, perhaps he's jet-lagged.
He can't be jet-lagged. He came on a boat.
I suppose it's because he's unable to sleep in the night time. He has bad dreams.
If Archie Bennett didn't have bad dreams, I wouldn't believe in God. Oh, my God. I'm smoking.
You're pacing again.
Nobody ever got lung cancer from pacing. Where's Daddy? He knows I'm only staying one day.
He's just having his walk. You could have gone with him. He would have greatly enjoyed your company.
It's too cold, and I'm too jet-lagged to put up with his harangue. I'm exhausted.
Take a nap.
I can't sleep in the daytime. I have to call my office. It's Saturday. What's this on TV? What are we watching? What is this, Drek?
I have no idea. You turned the television on, not I.
I did. You mind if I turn it off?
Not at all. Oh, you seem quite overwrought, darling.
You're underwrought. Why is it you're so calm?
Well, why shouldn't I be calm?
It should be obvious what your old friend wants here.
He wants me to leave your father and move back to England with him.
Holy crap.
Language, darling, please.
Does Daddy know about this?
He suspects this. He doesn't know this.
Daddy will kill this guy if he finds out. Are you gonna?
Tell Daddy?
Leave Daddy.
I haven't decided.
What?
Oh. I'm going to put the kettle on. I won't be a minute.
Dr. Weingarten, this is Cecily Shimmer again. I'm sorry to leave so many messages, but I'm having a sort of crisis. I'm still in Massachusetts at my parents' house. I've left you the number here in the last couple of messages, but in case your machine's broken, I'm at 508-281-4099. Please call me as soon as possible. Thanks, Dr. Weingarten. I'm sorry to bother you, but I guess you know I wouldn't if I didn't feel I had to. I hope your wrist is feeling better. Bye.
Oh, hello.
Hi. Sleep?
A bit. Is your dad around?
Is that working? Anything I can help you with?
Well, actually, the lab I'm using upstairs is out of loo rolls.
What's this?
Do you have any loo rolls in the house?
Loo Rolls? The singer?
Pardon?
You mean like his old records and tapes kind of thing?
I beg your pardon?
Hello, Arthur. Did you sleep?
Well, I dozed a bit.
Well, you're just in time for a cup of tea.
He wants something.
Oh, and what would that be, Arthur?
Do you have any spare loo rolls in the house? There's none in the upstairs lab.
In the vanity cupboard under the sink.
Yeah, I'm afraid I've looked there already.
Well, then try the ensuite lab in my bedroom. There should be a few spare loo rolls there.
Ah, ta.
Did you and Arthur have a misunderstanding?
Arthur is a misunderstanding.
Oh, you're so American, darling. It still amazes me. When you were little, it was amusing having an American child, but somehow I always thought that I'd take you home, bring out the English in you. But I never did I? Makes me sad, really.
You look like me, like I did at your age, but somehow I can never find myself in anything you say.
I'm losing my Englishness myself, and I don't know what I am anymore, really. Oh, that's a bit sad, isn't it? I mean, what I mean is, well, something's lost, isn't it? Ah, I won't be a minute.
Gerald, it's me. I'm still at my parents'. I know why I'm crazy, Gerald.
Yeah?
Hello?
Hi.
Gerald? Hi. Are you still sleeping?
Bed.
I'm sorry. No, go back to sleep. Yeah, call me when you get up. I'm at my parents'. I'll talk to you later. Go back to sleep.
Anything wrong?
What?
Late.
Somebody there?
No.
I just thought I heard somebody. Fine. No, it's fine.
No, I just have to do something. Go back to that.
Bye, Gerald.
Tea's up. Did someone call?
No. I called someone. Called Gerald.
Oh, that's a good idea. And how is Gerald?
In bed with somebody.
Somebody? Oh. Oh, I see. He told you this.
I could hear.
Did you ask him?
Mother, I could hear.
Oh, sometimes when you're overwrought, dear, the imagination plays tricks.
Mum, please.
Oh. Are you all right, darling?
I'm fine.
Is Gerald treating you badly?
Yes.
Do you want to end your marriage?
No. Yes, those two things. No and yes.
Is little Gerald difficult?
That's not it.
Well, what's it, dear?
Why do we let them get away with it, Mum? Men, they can't bear any success we have, can they?
Well, things were different in my day, I suppose. Women didn't seem to want so much.
You didn't, Mum? You always wanted to spend your life waiting for your husband to come home. Stinking of fish and female fish packers. Waiting for him to come in from his homo nights out with the boys, thinking of bar bimbos and beer.
You have such an unpleasant way of putting things, dear.
Yeah, well, maybe I do. Maybe I'm not telling you the honest-to-God truth, Mum. Maybe it's not just Daddy. Maybe it's that I'm terrified of ending up like you.
Well, that's charmingly put as well, love.
You know what I mean, not you personally. You personally are my ideal. You're beautiful, witty, composed, clear-headed. It's you, married, that terrifies me. I see what they're like, Mum. And I see what I'm like, what we're like. We're weak in their presence. We... Shit!
Are you all right, dear?
Never better.
We are different people, you and I. I tend to look on the brighter side of things. No marriage is easy, Cecily. Your father and I had some lovely times together.
He bullies you. He badges you. He treats you like you're dumb and useless. He talks down to you. He expects you to listen to the same stupefyingly boring stories over and over again, 10,000 times. He expects you to clean up after his endless mess. And he expects you to put up with the unspeakable.
I must ask you to stop.
Put up with the unspeakable.
Stop talking. You are insulting me.
Come away with me, Mum.
Pardon?
I want you to come away with me.
On a holiday?
On a life. I want you to come back to California with me.
What are you saying, Cecily?
I'm not going back to Gerald. I want you to come live with me, Mom. I make a lot of money, a wicked awful lot of money. Plenty for both of us, and then some. California is warm. People are happy there and polite. They smile at you. They stop their cars for pedestrians. It's like a walking dead here, Mom. Everything's frozen, covered with ice. There's no work. People are dead broke, depressed. Gloucester's a dead place. You're married to a fisherman who doesn't fish. He limps around here shouting orders at you like he's some dumb lumper working his crew. He's got no crew. He's got no hope. He's just waiting to die. You're young enough to live still, Mom. In 10 more years, who knows? Leave with me, Mom. Do the exciting thing for yourself. Leave him. Come live with me.
Why do you hate your father so?
Because I have been in psychoanalysis for 15 years trying to sort through my nightmares, Mom. Trying to find a way to stop believing that every man I meet isn't really, deep down, a woman-hating murderer come to kill me.
Oh, darling Cecily, surely you can't blame your father.
I can. And I do. Come away with me, Mom. We're both still young enough. You're still young enough. You can't seriously consider either of them, Mom. They're mean and they're old. In 5 years' time, they'll both be wearing pacemakers and colostomy bags, and you'll be wearing a nurse's uniform. Come with me, Mum. Live with me.
Ah, an English prisoner who can smell a good cup of tea through a stone wall. Am I interrupting something?
It's probably for me. Hello? Hi. It's for me. I'll go into the kitchen.
Don't you look smart?
Ah, Marks and Sparks. Oh, thank you very much.
Cup of tea?
Yeah, I don't mind if I do.
You seem a bit more rested.
I am, Bev, thank you. Very much so. Ah, ta. Oh, lovely. I was dreaming about you through my old sleep. And it was very pleasant stuff I dreamt as well.
Oh, that does embarrass me.
Does it?
Mm.
Good. Your Cecily's upset, isn't she?
I'm afraid she is.
Well, she's a bit passy to be going on about men holding women back from success, wouldn't you say? Did she never hear of Mrs. Thatcher, then?
Were you eavesdropping?
Not intentionally.
How much?
Oh, not that much. Weren't all that interesting.
Cecily's very successful out in California.
What's the point of being very successful if it brings her an output misery?
I suppose.
I know. Look at your singing Beatles. Their hubby's making movie pictures with them. Back home, they made bloody heroes of them. They're still a whacking great industry. Tour guides taking tourists to their bleeding haunts. And what's that about, really? The four of them are all misery personified. Living in America, injecting drugs, studying bizarre religions with opportunist Pakistanis. Success? One of them got himself shot in New York, didn't he? So what did success do for Beatles in the end? Tell me. Look, I will tell you, Bev. In a word, nout. I'm ready for another cup of tea, thank you. So why's that girl snivelling, really? She's at her hour with her hubby, I expect. If she weren't living in such a posh manner as she is, she'd have to face up to whatever's going wrong, wouldn't she? Instead, what's she doing to solve her problems? Look, I will tell you, lass. She's on a jet, flying home to Mum. Yeah, ta, very much, love. Oh, lovely.
Are you still working, Arthur?
Earning wages?
Yes, that too.
My father always used to say, you can't be floating about. That's too short. One job and one woman. That's all a man gets.
I suppose.
Look, I bloody know. I hated my job, by and large, but a job's only a job, isn't it? I stuck with it for 40 bloody years, didn't I? I've never been the sort to whinge. I'm a sticker. You'd be amazed how many of the old lads are in their graves or poking one toe in already. Just before I left my job, I heard Mrs. Thatcher herself giving a speech to the executive at works. I wasn't in the audience, exactly. I was doing my normal custodial duties, cleaning up. But I could hear her loud and clear. She talks about the stock market and investing in England. Well, I listened hard. I thought about what was going on up north, and I said to myself, Artie, you've got to learn to play the game by Mrs. Thatcher's rules, not by some Labour loser's rules. And I bloody did. It were Mrs. T herself who made me wealthy.
I withdrew all my pension money and I invested it in the stock market, but always based on Mrs. T's moves. Wherever Mrs. Thatcher went, I bet me squid on her. If she visited the Electrolux plant, I bought shares in Electrolux. If I saw a picture of her hoovering a bleeding carpet, I bought Hoover. If she drank a cup of cocoa, I bought Cocoa Futures. I stayed in the market for 3 years with profits soaring every day. But then, Bev, one Thursday night, without warning, I had the vision. Now, I must tell you that when I was a lad, me dad used to say, Arthur, lad, you mustn't never live a gambler's life. Gamblers don't gamble to win, they gamble to lose. And sooner or later, my lad, gamblers get their wish and lose everything they have. Oh, I remembered his words every day whilst I were raking in profits. It kept me in a sweat. But this particular night, I actually had a vision of me dad. A dream in which he appeared in front of me vividly, saying what he'd always said to me about gambler's life. But this time, he ended his advice by screaming, "Sell, Arthur! Sell!" God, it was terrifying. I screamed out loud, put myself up. Well, once I calmed down a bit, I said to myself, "Artie, you've made yourself a 2,000% profit. It's bloody enough. Get out. Do what Dad says. Sell." Well, as soon as 9 a.m. Friday morning rolled round, I rolled out of my bed and phoned my broker, Mr. Charles Peabody. I sold every investment I had, liquefied my assets. I made myself 219,000 quid after taxes. Clear profit.
That is wonderful, Artie.
Wonderful is a colossal understatement, woman. You do know what happened 72 hours later, don't you, love?
The market crashed.
Crashed? It fell through the bloody floor. The papers called it Black Monday.
I remember this.
But for me, Beverly, Black Monday was the golden payoff. Property values all over Britain went spiralling down. Interest on savings shot up. There are several richer men than I, but I am comfortable, Bev. Very, very, very comfortable. I bought myself a very substantial freehold property not far from Tatton Park. Detached. 4 bedrooms, double garage, whacking great garden, small pond.
Ooh, I love a fish pond.
It's not a fish pond, woman. It's actually a pond.
Oh, how wonderful for you, Artie.
Oh, it's so lovely when my neighbours sold, they advertised that their cottage overlooked a beauty spot.
Did they?
They did. And I credit you, Beverly Leach, for every speck of my good fortune.
Me? Why ever for?
Since the day I met you, Bev, I've always had the reason for living. And since the day I lost you, I've had the need to figure out what I was going to do to get you back. I've dedicated my life to this, to you.
Are you serious?
Deadly so. I always knew it were going to take some money, and probably a house, probably hopping up class ladder a rung or two.
All these years, thinking of me?
So many years back, I found a great and perfect love. A true love. And this true love sustained me. Sustained me hopes and me life. No matter how you've responded to me or how you will respond to me. I love you, Bev. Nothing's going to change that. When you used to sing Vera's songs to me, Bev, I were never happier. I believed you. I believed every word.
Oh, they were just songs, Artie.
But I believed them, Bev. They gave me such a thrill. Such thrilling hope.
We were young, Arthur. The bombs were falling.
Yours till the end of life's story. That's what I remembered all these years. It's kept me going, Beverly. It's kept me young.
Oh, dear. Oh. Look at us.
Oh, you're weeping, Bev.
Oh, yes, I know. Oh, it's so sad. Us grown old, as we have. Being young and beautiful with bombs falling.
What is it?
We should have died then, Artie. All of us. They were the lucky ones, really. The ones that loved and died. The ones that loved and lingered, like us, grown old. Well, we built nothing but our memories, Arthur. And then we die. And our memories die with us.
It's like we never happened. Oh, it's so sad. Oh, it's such a tragic loss.
You don't mean what you're saying, love.
Oh, I'm sure I don't. I'm sure you're right. There must have been some lovely moments afterwards with my family. But what? I can't remember. What?
That's why I've come for you, Bev. That's why I've come to take you back.
Oh, I can't.
It's just what Vera was singing. Today is the great day. Today is the day to make love. Today is the day we all live. Tomorrow is the mystery. Perhaps today we die. Sing to us, Bev, will you?
Oh, no.
Go on, go on. Sing to us.
Oh, Artie.
Hey, look, give us a Vera.
Artie, please. Oh, I feel so silly. Tears on my cheek. So sentimental. It's only that we've grown so old. It's only that life has passed us by. That's all that moves us to tears, really.
Look, stop that! Life's not bloody passed us by, Beverly Leach. Life's just been waiting in rain. Somebody's pushed bleeding pause button. But now we're talking to one another, lovey, aren't we? When lovers get talking, anything's possible, isn't it? Please give us a beer, Bev, will you? You've got a man on his knee, Beverly, begging you. Beverly.
Oh, get up, Arthur, please.
Do it, Beverly.
Oh, we'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again. I'm no Vera Lynn, Artie. I don't quite know who I am anymore, but I do know I'm not Vera.
I know who you are. You are Beverly Leach, the woman I dearly love. Kiss me, please. Oh.
I'm off the phone now. Shit.
Sorry. Oh. This is awful.
No, it is not awful, Bev. It's gorgeous. Kiss me again.
No. No, get away. No, get back.
So I'm done with my phone call. I'm coming back into the living room. You can advise, okay? Hi. What's up?
I'm going to my room. I want to be left alone. I mean it.
I'm back.
I thought you were out walking, Sally.
I came back.
Hey, you guys probably want to talk about things on your own, huh? Undisturbed. I'll be in my room packing.
What are you staring at, lad?
It's time, Archie.
Time for what? Time for what? I have asked you a question.
You're in the grey of December, here on far distant shores.
I never longed anyone the way I love you. How could I, when I was born to be just yours, just yours, when I was born to be just yours?
In the groove.
The needle's going to get ruined. I'll get it.
That's what she sang to me.
Those were different times, Archie. Couples, you know, got together pretty easy. It would have been hard to expect Beverly to stay, you know, just yours.
I didn't find it hard to expect. I expected it. We had an agreement, Bev and me, didn't we, love?
Nobody knew from one day to the next whether we'd be alive. They were bringing in the dead and the wounded. It got to you something wicked. It changed the rules.
You knew she were engaged to me, didn't you?
Archie, this is nuts. We're talking something that happened almost 50 years ago.
True love never dies.
Okay, okay, okay. It's out in the open. I stole Bev from you, okay? Fine. So what's anybody supposed to do about any of this?
You've had her for 45 years. I want the rest.
What's this?
I'm taking her back with me, Zelly.
What?
What can't you comprehend here, Zelly? I am speaking Queen's Bloody English, aren't I? I am taking Beverly Leach home to England, where she belongs.
Read my lips, mate. Over my dead body.
That may well be. The choice is the lady's, isn't it? Well, it's time, Bev. The moment of truth has come.
Cecily, come down the stairs and into the room. Join us. There's no point in hearing this on the sly.
Why does overhearing any conversation between your parents involving sex make you feel 6 years old and stupid? Okay, I'm in the room. I'm sitting. I'm one of the grown-ups. I'm really uncomfortable. Yes?
From the time Cecily was 6 until she was 16, I had a love affair with a local man.
You what?
Be quiet, Arthur. It's my turn. He was married. 2 children, a boy and a girl, James and Judy. He was an accountant. Not very exciting, but really very affectionate. Cecily knew about it. Children know everything that goes on in the house. Zelly knew about it as well. Not every detail, but you knew, didn't you, darling?
What's the point of this, huh? This isn't anybody's business.
The point is that I'm talking. The point is that I'm speaking my thoughts. I'm choosing my words. Now be quiet. When Cecily was young, there was no end to Zelly's old girlfriends traipsing through this house. The one who cleaned for us. What's her name? Shoes.
Bootsy.
Exactly, Bootsy. And the babysitter with the enormous bottom. Ginger-haired. Irish.
Mary Louise?
Mary Louise.
I remember Mary Louise. I loathed Mary Louise. She smelled bad.
Zelly used to kiss Mary Louise hello and goodbye on the mouth. Zelly had a string of extra women in his life, and I just had one extra man, Alan. Alan loved me. We met in Alan's office Tuesdays and Fridays from 3 till 5 while Cecily had her piano lesson. Cecily learned Chopin's Body of Work, and I learned Alan's Body.
Bloody hell! And where's he now, this accountant?
Gone. Dead. He wasn't young, even then. Poor Cecily's seen it all, haven't you, dear?
What do you mean, Cecily's seen it all? Was she in bloody room with you?
No, she weren't, lad. Not with Alan. But she were bloody in the room with me and Zelly slugging it out.
Zelly struck you?
Belt up, will you, man? You go on like a bloody ignorant. Growing up with parents in a loveless marriage is a disaster. I was too selfish to see it at the time for what it was, but I see it clearly now. I've never talked with Cecily, mother to child, woman to woman. Not once, not ever before now. But I am now. I am talking. I'm sorry, Cecily. I apologize for not making a good marriage. I know you're unhappy, and I know why. I take full responsibility for my part in it.
It's not all your fault, Mother. Don't think it is.
Oh, I don't. I know it's not all my fault, but a great deal of it is my fault, and I'm sorry for all that. I love you, Cecily.
I love you too. Oh.
I've asked Mum to come to California with me, to live with me.
Your mother lives here with her husband, with me. These things are in the past, lady. These things are forgiven and forgotten.
Zelly's got another family.
Jesus, Beverly.
He got a young Italian girl pregnant about 10 years into our marriage. I was nearly 30. Cecily was 5 and the girl was 20. She and her mother worked for Zelly, cutting fish on the line. The mother knew about it, about what was going on with her daughter and Zelly. In fact, she almost seemed to approve. I knew the girl myself, of course. She wasn't beautiful, but she was what you'd call good-looking. Dark-eyed, round-faced, large-breasted, strong. I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to go home to England. My dad worshipped Zelly, and my mother would never take my part against him. Being so deeply unhappy in my marriage somehow made me feel stupid. She had his child. Everybody in Gloucester knew about it. My friends, Cecily's friends, and everybody knew we knew as well. Nobody ever said a word about any of it to us directly, but couldn't you bloody hear the hush whispers, the snide comments, how superior it made them all feel? In this house, it was always the unspeakable. Zelly never let us talk about it, never let me bring it up, and I agreed with him somehow. It was never spoken of out loud until now. She never married, the girl, I mean, not the child. He did, the child. He married, and he moved away. He writes to Zelly from time to time, doesn't he, dear? He calls him Dad. The girl's still in town. She's how old now? 59? This all still hurts me, Zelly. When you're young, you trust in people, in marriage. Marriage seems possible. Natural. There are so many secrets in a marriage, aren't there? So many lies. But at the end of the day, all the empty excitement of love affairs and heart-pounding intrigue can't distract any of us from our essential unhappiness. I am a profoundly unhappy woman. I've been this for an unthinkable number of years now. And that's everybody's big secret, really, isn't it? Profound unhappiness. Lack of purpose. Lack of reason. I'm unhappy. Cecily's unhappy. Zelly's unhappy. And Arthur, you're a misery. Take my word for it. There was only one thrilling time in my entire life, Arthur. I was 17 years old, and the bombs were falling all around me. Up the road a mile or so from my house, there was this RAF base with about 2,000 lads, mostly my age. You, Arthur, and 1,999 others, all young, all beautiful to look at, all gorgeous to the touch, all scared to death to live or die. And up the road, 3 miles or so, there was Zelly's American air base, with about 1,000 more lads, same age, same life. All told, there couldn't have been more than 100 unmarried girls my age in the entire area. Bombs falling from the sky almost every night of our lives, and a ratio of 30 lads to every one of us young girls. Now this, for me, defines thrilling. Our parents were telling us to stay away from the flyboys, but our hearts and our minds and our bodies were saying, live for the moment, girl. Any one of Hitler's bombs could be the one with your name on it. Don't die unfulfilled. Don't die unloved. Don't die untouched. Don't talk to me about a thrilling life, Arthur. I have known the ultimate thrill of my particular life. And only a fool would imagine such a thrill could be challenged or equaled or recaptured. For me, there have been very few discernible advantages to peacetime. My needs were always so different from Zelly's. He just needed a few chaps to remind him he was once a hero. And what I needed, quite honestly, was 30 men fighting over me. I needed to be young and beautiful, walking through tiny cobble streets lined with hungry young men, all wanting me, all staring at my breasts and my bottom, touching me with their eyes, wanting me. Oh, I did need that. And I'm afraid I still bloody do. I had that. And anything less was and is, sadly, lacking. Isn't it awful to hear this said out loud? It was, I admit, quite exciting when I knew that Zelly was actually cheating on me. It gave me a kind of freedom. I knew I could do whatever I wanted, with whomever I wanted, and I couldn't ever be blamed for my sins. Isn't it awful to hear this said out loud? But in the end, between us, between Zelly and me, it was dead. It felt like I was trapped in a cave alone. Only I wasn't alone, was I? I was just bloody trapped. Don't you think that people like us finally die because they want to? I do.
Think that?
Want to die.
Don't say that, Mum, please.
Sod that, woman. You're talking like a right nutter. What's ahead is the big sleep. No bloody more, no bloody less. You don't need rest, lady, as you've done now, to tire you out. Fancy you calling me a misery and an ignorant when you're talking like a pathetic spot. Get off your bottom, Beverly. Life's precious. If you have missed the point, I'll give it to you. Here is the kiss you've been needing. Here.
Oh! Oh, don't you dare. I'll decide who I kiss and when.
You, that really hurts.
Come here.
What are you doing?
I'm kissing Arthur. Come here, Arthur. Now, do you want to kiss Zelly?
I do.
Well, come and get it. Well, come and get it then. Where am I getting this girlish power? Come here, Zelly.
Hey, look, I don't like this. Look, get away from him.
Don't go near them.
Oh, what? Look, stop that kissing. I wish to God I'd be the one who'd had you in my sight instead of the Jerry. I'd never have botched it, believe you me.
What?
Look, you heard me. It's my life's one and only regret. I was up there in the same bloody skirmish. If I had had my sights on you, I wouldn't have bloody missed. I'd have made a corpse of you. The Jerry made a bloody hero of you instead. It's the only reason she married you, lad. She told me that herself. You can thank bloody Adolf for your marriage.
I should kill you.
You and what brigade?
You told him this, Beverly? Is this why you married me, because of some cowboy, flyboy heroics?
No.
Then why did you?
I married you because I loved you. Because I wanted to be your wife.
And now?
Please don't, Zelly.
I don't hear an answer to my question.
Answer the man, Bev.
What's your question, Zelly?
Now. Would you marry me now?
Don't do this, Zelly.
Answer me, goddammit!
No. I wouldn't marry you now, Zelly.
No.
I won't ask the same question of you, Zelly, because I know the answer.
We don't get this time back, lady. It's gone.
I spent a bloody bum on this trip, and it were worth it. Twice the cost would have been worth it. This is a dream come true.
Here's my dream come true, pal.
Ah! Oh!
God! Look. Stop it!
You stop
no.
me!
Yeah, hey, that's what the way we Yanks do it, look, mate.
I'll show you what a Yorkshireman does it, bub. Lot you listen here.
No, stop
oh!
It.
God!
Stop it,
I'm getting yeah. you out of here. You get out of here.
Look, what are you doing?
You get out of here.
Stop it, both of you.
Look, hey,
out here, Sally.
Out the door. Out!
I would so marry you, Beverly. I would. I swear to God I would.
No, you wouldn't, Sally. Don't lie to me. I know you too well. Don't lie to me. Don't lie to yourself.
Stay with me, Beverly. I know I haven't been much of a husband, but I can be. I will be. Give me a chance, Bev. Please. I'm begging you. What the hell is funny?
You're telling me that you haven't been much of a husband for 45 years, but now you want a chance. A chance? You don't think that's funny?
Unlock this bloody door. Let me in. Let me in.
I'm going to my room to pack up my things. It's over, Zelly. Now, don't blame Cecily for my leaving, but I must admit, it was she who finally got me off my bottom by telling me her biggest fear was that she might turn out to be just like me. That was my biggest fear as well, that I'd turn out to be just like my mother. Not my mother fully, just my mother married. Oh, I wasn't strong enough for any of us, was I? But now I will be. I'm leaving, Sally. It's over.
Let me in, Shimmer!
Let Arthur back in, please, dear. He's an old man. He'll die out there. I'm not going with you, Cecily. That's your life, not mine. I'm going to my room to pack.
She'd have been my wife. I wouldn't have let her go, I can tell you that. Nothing but broken homes out there. All over the world. Family means bloody nothing. I read the papers. I see the bloody television. Divorce, divorce, divorce. People saying that till death us do part, part with one foot out the bloody door. Can't you control your own wife, for God's sake, man? Can't you show the woman earthly reason? Bloody warrior, oh my arse. I know a man when I see one, and I see bloody none. If I miss this bloody train to Boston, I'll miss my bloody boat back to England. And then what? Look, I'll tell you what. I'll be stranded. I'll be one of the bloody 100,000 homeless beggars I've stepped over since I've been in bloody America. If I'm going to be down and out, I'm going to be down and out in bloody England, where they know how to make a chip butty and a decent cup of tea.
He's up, lads.
How come you're so cheery, lass?
I'm bloody happy for my mum, lad. That's what? Ready for a fresh cuppa?
Aye, give us one then.
Was it two?
Two.
Here you are, love.
Ah, ta very much. God! What is this?
It's herbal, love. Better for you than caffeine when you're travelling.
What is this stuff?
Rose hips.
Rose hips?
Uh-huh.
Ugh. Sounds like the name of a bloody exotic dancer. Ah, that's my taxi. Well, let's shake, eh? All's fair in love and war, lad, isn't it? Thanks for letting me stay in your house, Sally. We're the lucky ones, you know. We're the survivors.
We've still got life to live. Well, maybe we'll see each other again. I expect we will. Don't know where, don't know when. Vera. God bless Sally.
God bless Archie.
Oh, Cecily, love. Dr. Weingarten called whilst you were up talking to your mum. I told him he was doing a shitty job and that you had committed suicide. Let's give him something to worry about, eh, love? Well, take care of yourselves. If you don't, no one else will.
Here's a cup for you, Dad. This one's real tea. I made his cup up special.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
You're going to have to help me through this, Ceci. I can't face this alone.
You want me to stay a while?
Could you? Would you?
Yes.
You think she'll come back?
It's up to her, isn't it?
It can't end this way. Women can't just leave.
Dear Zelly, the oddness of being so far from you is indescribable. I know it's unfair, my being the one to leave. The one who stays behind feels a loser somehow. I know this is true because I so often thought you'd leave me. I never imagined I'd be the one to leave. It doesn't seem like me, does it? Don't worry about me, Zelly. I'm in a safe place. I'd like to tell you where I am, but I don't yet dare. I'm frightened you'll come after me, force me back, and that wouldn't be good, because I've spent too much time in my married life planning what I would do after you died. Those were my secret fantasies, Zelly, the things I would do after you were gone. I never wanted you dead. I just wanted to leave, and I could never imagine any other way out the door. I have a chance to substitute teach, Zelly, 2 days a week. Oh, I know it doesn't sound earth-shattering news, but it's the most exciting thing that's happened to me in my life in the past 30 years. Oh, it must be terrible for you to read this. You are so present in my life, Zelly. Even the thought of being near you fills me with dread. Still and all, whatever I see, I think immediately that I should rush to tell you about it. After my dad died, when I went to see my mum, I remember how lost she seemed without her darling husband, Den. She told me that the first thought she'd had after she knew for sure Dad was dead was, I can hardly wait to ring Den up and tell him who died. I could hardly wait to write this letter to you, Zelly, because I could hardly wait to tell you the most amazing news. Beverly's left Zelly. I'll write to you again soon. Yours, as never before, Beverly.
In Fighting Over Beverly by Israel Horovitz, Beverly was played by Rosemary Harris, Archie by Ian Carmichael, Cecily by Elizabeth McGovern, and Zelly by Israel Horovitz. The organist was Neil Brand. Fighting Over Beverly was directed by Ned Shiye.